Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Here we are together one more time on this Friday, Paul, before I head off to the West Coast and maybe a bit warmer climate. It is a pleasure, as it has been all summer and fall, to be with you. I've really enjoyed this, Paul.
Well, Dennis, I'm going to miss you a great deal. And, you know, we're getting weather today that really is kind of shocking. Everything's all wrong. This morning, while shaving, I cut myself on the nose.
On the nose.
How does one cut? Now I know why I mustered out of the neurosurgery program at Iowa University. You don't cut yourself on the nose.
No, in fact, it's scary to think about what you were doing with your nose while you cut it. That's ridiculous. But didn't it freeze immediately? Because the temperature this morning was 37 degrees and a wind chill of 27.
Oh, my farm cat was threatening to resign today.
Well, it is great to be here, and we have a fine show in the works today, Paul. A bit later, we're going to take a look at what made news this past week in the Ames Tribune.
And after that, Mary Rankin will join us. She's in charge of all things sustainability at both Iowa State University and the City of Ames. And as always, she'll have plenty to say that we can all chew on.
But first today, that other voice you heard laughing in the background while Paul and I were talking is the voice of the mayor of Ames, John Hala. Mr. Mayor, we are so happy to have you back. Even though it's a bit chilly today, you're going to warm things up with us.
Yeah. I hope so. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here, guys.
It's great having you here. Hey, we have plenty of things to talk about. Let's start with this resident satisfaction survey that the City Council discussed this past week. Wow, 98% of residents responding ranked their overall satisfaction with the City of Ames services good or very good. That's pretty darn good.
It is, and it's very consistent. Our Director of Public Relations, Susan Guiazda, has been doing this for well over 15 years. And then prior to that, someone else was doing it. And so we're trying to get a good benchmark from year to year to see how our residents are evaluating services, everything from, pardon the expression, but, you know, soup to nuts, essentially. You know, everything from fire, police, streets, library, park system. And it gives us a good snapshot, and also we talked at length on Tuesday night with the council about using this as a foundation to build for a goal-setting session that will happen in January. Every 2 years, council will set goals for the next 2 years, and then the in-between year, then we go ahead and adjust those. So this gives us a fresh look at what the community is evaluating as being positives, and what are some things we can work on.
No, I think that when I look at the sheet here that sort of summarizes it, it's a very positive. Of course, we know that Ames is a quality of living place. Great library. I love the fact that there are trees downtown.
Yes.
You know.
Yep.
An interesting shopping district. And I think that when you look at things that are guideposts for things where people might want improvement, it says that the negative feedback included traffic flow, road repair, and housing.
Which is consistent with Paul. That's a good observation. That's consistent, according to Susan. Every year it comes up, and we all drive around, and our weather takes its toll on the roads. And Public Works does a tremendous job trying to keep on top of it and keep them patched. But the city spends millions of dollars every year on road repairs, street improvements, and as that infrastructure ages, it just needs to be attended to.
Well, you know, look at the temperature variations in the Midwest.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You go from 90 degrees to below zero.
Yep.
This is expansion and contraction, folks.
Correct.
That's going to wear things down. And, you know, I, for one, never really get uptight about road repair and detours because I know that you have X number of weeks during the more temperate climate in the summer to get this stuff done. And I want that done, you know. I don't want to hit a pothole at 40 miles an hour and have my axle drag on the road.
Yeah.
So you have to look at the end product. But people still get impatient, and these are mild irritants. And until you realize that half the population has a 40-minute commute to work every day.
But not here.
Not here.
Yeah, we have a rush minute.
Yeah.
A rush minute.
Well, the other factor, too, is that Public Works tries to get most of the work done right after school, after university dismisses for the summer, and tries to compress it in a 12 to 14 week time period. And unfortunately, a lot of projects can't be done that soon. So we're trying to minimize the inconvenience to our residents, but work needs to be done.
We're talking traffic as one of the, shall we say, irritants in the survey. The South Grand Avenue Extension Project, most residents support that, according to the survey. But that project now, which is going to take South Grand from South 4th to South 16th.
Correct.
And I believe it's 5th Street that's going to be cut west to
Correct.
Combine with it. That project is designed to take a load, and there is a load on South
yes,
Duff Avenue.
Absolutely.
In fact, I was on that load last night trying to get to and from Hickory Park, and it is very difficult. How much do we really think that extension project on South Grand, which people really do support, is going to take the pressure off South Dev?
I don't have the exact facts for you, Dennis. That's a good question for Public Works, but I know that it's going to be noticeable at a minimum, hopefully sizable, for those that are wanting to get onto 69 South, you know, going to Huxley, or getting over and getting to the on-ramp. On a 30. The good news is that we finally have the property procured under consent agenda on Tuesday night. The final piece to the puzzle was completed, where an agreement was made with the property owner for some easement around the golf course. And last week we got an agreement that was reached with purchasing the last piece of property that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. So residents can expect next year to start seeing construction. I believe that South 5th is going to be the first leg coming over. Then we have some bridges to build, bridges not being like huge over the Mississippi River, but we have, and we're going to go over Squaw Creek, and then going forward. So in the next few years, I hope in the next 2 to 3 years it will be actually driving.
Quick follow-up question. It looks like that road, the South Grand Extension, is going right through Coldwater Golf Links, is it?
It is, but it was planned from the onset with that golf course development. And if you look at a satellite image, you clearly see how the holes are arranged, and there's actually an area which is not really part of the golf course, although balls may wander one way
Especially
or other.
If I'm onto, playing, yeah.
Yeah, well, if I was, you don't want to drive down there if I was doing that. But there is, it's been planned from the start. So it's not like this was a surprise to the property owner or the golf course operator. It was known all along. And it's going to snake over, not going to be a straight run. It's going to go south, and then it'll snake over to the southeast. And then it tees in, there's that new, forget which, the brand new hotel just got that opened up here just recently on South 16th, mm-hmm. and then there's some apartment buildings. It goes in right in between those two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it said that some of the respondents said that they thought too many apartments were being built. What do you think, John? Is that true?
Oh, I would agree with that. I think that the developers will tell you that that's the case at this point in time, that we've all been in the community for quite some time, and can you remember a time where you had so many, vacancies or now leasing flags flying, not only in just one or two private residences, but you see them at some of these large apartment complexes. Yes, they – not surprising. There's an excitement when we take on 10,000 more students in the course of 10 years. There's an opportunity. And frankly – we're thankful that developers did invest in that, because where would you put all those additional students? There was no place to really to accommodate them.
Well, I think also
apartments,
that's the pathway to some more affordable housing in the community. You got to consider that, because a freestanding home might be beyond the investment possibilities for people. Apartments that give you an opportunity if you got a job that pays slightly above minimum wage. To me, everyone complains about the lack of affordable housing in any community.
Mm-hmm.
Apartments are a partial answer, aren't they?
They can be. It's unique from the standpoint of being in a college town. Mm-hmm. You have the market may dictate higher rents, and not all those a lot of those apartments are targeted to students. So you may have like a 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom with 2, 3, or 4 bathrooms. Mm-hmm. And then you may have just a living room.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a family, they may want to have, a larger living area, a larger kitchen, dining area, and maybe less bathrooms. But the point is that that's the city lets the marketplace dictate that, and then private investors I remember when I was in 2017 when I was running and going to all the council meetings, you know, during that entire year, it was very common to have another site plan for another, you know, apartment complex. And I think the first month or two that I was in office, we had one more come through. Since then, we've seen none. So the faucet's been turned off. And I think that they're going to let the market reset. And with the addition of the big complex there on 69 that is getting finished by the airport, that's a big complex. And then there's also some apartments down by I take that back. There are a few small apartment complexes just to the west of Research Park, the Ted Tedesco Learning Center,
yes,
in that area. But those are young professional targeted apartment complexes versus being for students. But it's really the flow has really slowed down significantly.
One of the irritants that you had to deal with upon your election is this issue of rental housing around the campus. Mm-hmm. Boy, that was a tough one for a long time, long, long council meetings for many, many weeks, because the state essentially did away with the city's ability to regulate on the basis of rentals, on the basis of unrelated family members.
Correct.
And now you're doing it by bedrooms. What do you think in terms of those neighborhoods? I'm talking South Campus area, I'm talking Old Edwards, all those neighborhoods that have been, in their minds, overrun by renters in the last 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell them about the future of their neighborhoods based upon where we regulate and how we regulate now? What's the future there?
Well, as you're aware, the legislature this year, this session during 2019, a lot of my time was spent in March and April down there talking, emailing, writing letters, trying to organize groups. We partnered with Iowa City and talked to the legislature. But we lost the battle with the city being able to cap the number of rentals in a neighborhood. So that was undone. Now we've gone back and there's a limitation on the number of bedrooms that's been put in. I think at this point in time, council is going to just say we've done what we can at this point out of respect to what the legislature has told us we can do. And I think there's some load leveling going on in those neighborhoods. Now we have just our council is going through and adopting the rental housing, our vacation lodging. So you have the bed and breakfast, which has always been allowed by a special use permit. And you have a home share, where hosted home share, where someone can actually come in and rent or can rent a room out while you're there. And then you have VRBO, which is vacation rental by owner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you actually have a vacant house. And one of the things that we were concerned about was could that all of a sudden become – it's a short-term rental. And that definition is you have a contract for less than 31 days to live there.
Mm-hmm.
So we know they're very popular in many destinations. It's interesting in Iowa – some communities don't even allow VRBOs. West Des Moines is one of them. They just say we're not going to approve them, period. Council has adopted or is going to allow that, but there's a 1,000-foot radius that goes around from that to try and reduce the potential for a high concentration, you know, in the near-campus neighborhoods. And there's going to be a very short moratorium that will allow some people who already have owned property to try to get in and apply for it. It's all written in the new ordinances that we're working through. But I do – council does – I mean, council understands that the affordable housing stock is in a lot of those older neighborhoods. They're so core – they're so key to the strength and the health in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been people who have been so committed to those neighborhoods for a long period of time. And we want to protect those. So there's this very fine line that we have to kind of walk down. And they've talked about it at length during council meetings. So I was pleased that we got the 1,000-foot radius, because once the moratorium – and it's a very short moratorium. It's like only a couple of weeks because we're trying to get this pinned down. Then all of a sudden it's going to take – I think you can only have a few – VRBO vacation rentals, you know, in a near campus neighborhood, because at 1,000 foot, that's actually a 2,000 foot diameter, 1,000 foot radius, and the way they measure it, it's going to push it several blocks away. We'll try and reduce some of that as well, too. And I think we are starting to see some houses come on the market for sale or for some conversion as well, too.
That's good.
So I think we're going to try to see some load leveling, but affordable housing, it is a critical need in our community.
Well, you know, in a college town, you're really talking about administrating two different worlds. Campus town and the university is one, with its own requirements and necessities and problems and conflicts. And then Ames is another, you know. Now, I thought it was interesting when I looked at the survey. Half the respondents were Iowa State students.
Mm-hmm.
And they rated the city's strength of community higher than Ames residents did. Isn't that interesting?
That was very good observation, Paul. And that's interesting. As you're talking off air, just before you went on, it's a randomly generated survey that's sent out by mail to 1,350 year-round residents and 1,000 students. And it's not just something that we cook up. It's actually scientifically generated from a standpoint of, random generation, but we also have help from some statisticians, on campus as well, too, to try and make it so it is truly a random sampling. And we got back about 300-plus resident surveys and about 300-plus student surveys, which is interesting is that we got a few more statistically than we did for students, which is very encouraging because that means that we're getting student feedback. But according to the statisticians, it was a significant enough return that we could put confidence in the report that it was it gave a good snapshot of what the community is saying. But yes, it's and that's one thing we did talk about at a council meeting on Tuesday night too, is how can we continue to build the sense of community in the neighborhoods and in Ames. And I think that's one of the things that I'm going to bring up in our goal setting session. I think there's some things we can do to try and help foster that even more.
Most residents said they were pleased and they praised the Ames Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And they said the city is safe in their mind. But slightly more than half, 51%, said there needs to be increased efforts regarding the PD's commitment to investigating sex-related offenses. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that was a little perplexing to me. Because I don't know, and there may be more of those that are not publicized than what I'm aware of, or maybe there are those types of crimes that are occurring in the community that are people are aware of but are not getting reported as well, too. We have an outstanding police department, and they work tirelessly to and in fact, Jessica Reynolds recognized both the City of Ames Police Department and ISU Police Department for their efforts, to help solve the crime for the for Celia's murder.
Celia Barcana Rosamena, yeah.
And but there, what's helpful is having these surveys is that each department gets a copy of the results. They can start drilling down into and find out, okay, what is it? Are there things that we can do that would be help us provide even better service? So that one I don't have a real good answer for you on that one, Dennis.
Celia Barcana Rosamena, the Iowa State student killed last year on the Coldwater Golf Links, as a matter of fact.
And yep.
The man who did it pleaded guilty and is in prison for life.
Right.
That shocked the community. That shocked me to the core. What was your reaction? How did you react to that?
I think it's a repeated refrain, and that is it's probably the worst day in elected office to have to even contemplate the randomness of that. And we're making positive changes in the community. Parks Department are more proactively going out and looking at places where they know places where people could potentially gather for either homelessness or and we don't want – I do not want to categorize this is just because a person's a homeless that they're going to be potentially, a violent offender.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue that we need to be looking at too, is a homeless issue. But also the police department is working more proactively in certain ways as well.
Yeah. No, I really think that when you look at Ames, one thing that emerges in a survey is people feel safe. Mm-hmm. People feel as if this is a community that's really enhancing their lifestyle. I think I found it interesting that the students responded in such a way that they didn't feel like temporary residents in that sense. They wanted to give you honest feedback. That's an investment in the community where they are, even temporarily. And the things in the survey that are slightly negative really come, I think, under the category of chronic complaints, you know. The construction that goes on, too much enforcement of speed limits, you know. These are the little irritants where county and city government maybe infringe on their right to be lawless in little ways, you know. So.
And that was encouraging, Paul, because one of the things that talking with the administration at Iowa State and council and staff is we really want to make the students believe, feel, sense that they are part of the community, mm-hmm. and they are. And council and I as mayor represent all of them as elected officials.
We have a couple of minutes left and so much to talk about. I want to talk briefly about Ames Plan 2040. It's the effort to determine where Ames could grow over the next couple of decades to the year 2040 with an increase in population of about 15,000. Explain where this is going to go and how quickly it's going to go in terms of this plan.
Well, where it's at right now is council has met with consultants several times and has looked at potential scenarios. As you identified, there's 15,000 residents projected to be moving, not students, this is residents mm-hmm. moving mm-hmm. to Ames by 2040, and that's about a 1.5%, I think, per year growth. So we need more housing to accommodate those individuals. We'll need more commerce and also anticipate more job opportunities as well. So we looked at different quadrants. We're going to be looking at infill options here in the next month. The consultants are coming back. I would say it's probably a third to maybe halfway through the conversation and planning process. There's still a lot of work to be done. At the last council meeting where we talked about this topic, we selected a type of plan that would be more prescriptive in nature, conceptual in nature, just descriptive, not prescriptive. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, we want to have a written plan that casts a vision for the community and what can be done within the current confines of the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
And what can be done or where can we accommodate that growth? And I believe council, and I know I personally have been pretty vocal on this, we need to have options that we don't lock developers into having to go a certain direction.
Right.
You know, when the last one was done, the city committed resources, built a water tower out to the west, put in infrastructure. Well, property owners didn't want to sell property out there. So all of a sudden, we put a lot of money in the ground and above the ground and really wasn't able to leverage that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we really want the public to continue to provide feedback and input. There will still be public input sessions coming up. But the goal is we want to get this done and in place by sometime, you know, mid to late next year, maybe by the end of 2020. Apparently, the last time this was done, it took 7 or 8 years to get finished. Well, then you're already halfway through the plan.
Yeah.
So let's get this finished up.
Well, you know, John, on our Wednesday program, we had Rick Sanders, who's president out there at the
mm-hmm.
research park,
yep.
talking about all the exciting things happening out there.
Yep.
And, you know, there are mayors of towns that are in decline. You're mayor of a town that's on the rise. It's very exciting. And you have all the accoutrements and qualifications and personality traits that Ames deserves.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
I think
that
you're
very
doing
much.
A That's fine cool. job, and we love having you here. And
we do.
You're mayor of the year, as far as I'm
concerned. Oh, yeah. Will you come back and join us on Local Talk?
Oh, I'd love to. And I just want to say how much I appreciate the conversation and the fact that you don't just ask. They're not softball questions, and I value the local radio and local communication. We talk about that also off air. It's so important.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, I mean, I. wish you well on the way out to California. Yeah. But honestly, I've kind of gotten to the point where this is an awful lot of fun to sit with the two of you.
We
and talk
will
about
have
issues.
You back. We would love to have you between us on our first broadcast when we come back.
That'd be,
okay?
I would count it an honor to do
and
that.
And John, you and I will share the slings and arrows of outrageous winter, and then Dennis will be out.
We'll have to get his email and send pictures to him. And just
that's
say,
right.
Yeah,
I'll be following very closely through this radio station and through the Ames Trib.
All right.
And Mayor, I'll be in contact with you via email and text
That'd
message and all
That'd
that.
Be awesome.
Okay?
Appreciate that.
So stay warm here, okay?
All right.
Thanks for joining us on Local Talk. Mayor John Hala, good man, thank you. Now, don't touch that dial. Don't even think about it, because after this brief timeout, we will have the week's news from the Ames Tribune. And after that, Mary Rankin. Mary Rankin steps into the guest seat talking about all things sustainability.
Back with more of Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I must be Dennis Hart, and it must be 27 minutes after the hour on this Friday. Time to take a quick look at what's been making news this week on the pages of the Ames Tribune. And there was plenty to report, starting with Saturday, when the Trib had word that Story County had received a grant from the U.S. Department of Justice to create a program to divert nonviolent offenders who have a drug addiction away from the criminal justice system. The county is going to share nearly $2 million with Black Hawk and Jones counties. Also a story about this being Domestic Violence Awareness Month and what local agencies are doing to get more information to the public about domestic violence. Sunday brought word about research that shows more Iowa State University students voted in the midterm election in 2018 than had voted in the 2014 midterm. About 11,500 ISU students cast ballots in the midterm last year compared to the approximately 6,600 who did so in 2014. Of course, Sunday's paper had numerous stories about Iowa State University's 49-24 victory over TCU at Jack Trice Stadium on Saturday in a game that started 2 hours late because of lousy weather. Tuesday's paper brought word about the campaign stop that Democratic presidential hopeful Kamala Harris made at Cafe Diem on Main Street here in Ames on Monday afternoon. The California senator told the crowd of about 50 people that if she is elected president and if Congress does not enact major gun legislation, she would take executive action to do so in her first 100 days in the Oval Office. Tuesday's paper also reported that absentee voting for the upcoming November 5th Ames City Council and School Board elections began this past Monday. Mailed ballots will be sent to absentee voters who have completed a request form, and all eligible voters can vote at the Story County Auditor's Office in Nevada. On Election Day, November 5th, polls will be open at 7 a.m. and close at 8. Also Tuesday, the Trib reported what we have just discussed with Ames Mayor John Hala here on Local Talk, that the annual residential satisfaction survey conducted by the city shows that 98% of residents said their overall satisfaction with services is either good or very good. Wednesday's paper reported on the visit of another Democratic presidential candidate to central Iowa. This time, it was New Jersey Senator Cory Booker who went to Boone on Tuesday. He told a crowd there that even though his poll numbers have barely budged beyond 2 or 3%, he thinks the Iowa caucuses will be won on, in his words, character, not polls. Also Wednesday, word that the building that once housed the old Main Brewing Company on Main Street here in Ames, and which has been closed for several months, has a buyer. But details on who that buyer is and what future plans for the building are being kept secret because of a confidentiality agreement. Also Wednesday, a report on Tuesday's Story County Board of Supervisors meeting where board members discussed plans to remodel and expand the county attorney's office in Nevada. Also a story about Monday's Ames School Board meeting, where, among other things, the board approved a 3-year contract for new superintendent Jenny Reisner, her salary this school year, $204,000. And on the court beat, the Trib reported the trial for the Ames man accused of tearing down a pride banner from the Ames United Methodist Church, or the United Church of Christ, and then setting that banner on fire, is set to begin next Tuesday. Yesterday's paper reported on Vice President Mike Pence's visit to a farm in Waukee on Wednesday. The VP urged Democrats in Congress to pass the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement by the end of the year. Also yesterday, word that for the second time in a month, Ames has been ranked as one of the top college towns in the United States. Listen to this. Livability.com, a company that promotes cities with populations of less than 1 million, ranked Ames third on its list behind only Ithaca, New York, and Manhattan, Kansas. Now, last month, Ames was ranked number one by 24/7 Wall Street, a financial news and opinion company. Yesterday's paper also reported on something we had told you about on Wednesday right here on Local Talk. This Sunday's Run for the Roses races at the Ames Middle School. The races benefit the Arthritis Foundation. First event will take place at 9 o'clock Sunday morning, no matter how chilly it is. And one more note from yesterday. If you like bacon, that's right, bacon, head out to the Hanson Agricultural Learning Center on Mortenson Road in Ames tomorrow between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. That's where you can get all the bacon you can eat at the 7th Annual Iowa State University Bacon Expo. There will also be live pigs, live bands, and live bounce houses. How can you go wrong with that? Today's Trib. Friday's reports that the Ames City Council delayed making a decision this past week on two bids regarding the project to repair the restroom that was damaged by fire at Brookside Park. The two companies that had placed bids on the project went over the engineer's estimate for it. Also today, word that the Ames School Board had welcomed Kristen Johnson as the district's new Human Resources Director during this week's meeting. And two more quick notes from today's paper. Democratic presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg will return to this area when he appears at Benton Auditorium in the Scheman Building on the Iowa State University campus next Wednesday evening, 6 o'clock. And the Ames Fire Department going to hold its annual open house at Fire Station No. 1 at 13th Street and Burnett Avenue from 9 a.m. to noon tomorrow. So, bacon tomorrow, Paul. Bacon. This is the Bacon Expo. All the bacon you can eat. Are you going to be there?
I'm sorry I have a conflict, but you know, there's something about bacon. This magic. Look at that big festival in Des Moines where people come in. And I think you go to that convention and then directly to your cardiologist.
Well, they're going to have live pigs, and they're going to have live bounce houses, and they're going to have live bands. What more is there on a Saturday?
All you could do is have live bacon. That might be even more.
And that is your summary, mercifully, of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. Woo. Now, don't go away. Mary Rankin is next. And as always, she'll have word on how we can all make our lives much better through sustainability. Welcome back to more of Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio. That was David Sanborn. I'm Dennis Hart. It's 35 minutes after the hour on this Friday.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Joining us now is one of our favorite people, Mary Rankin, who wears at least two hats. She's the Director of Sustainability at both Iowa State University and the sustainability coordinator for the City of Ames, and she's brought along a special guest. Welcome, Mary, and introduce our other guest today.
Thank you. Good morning. It's
Good morning.
Always a pleasure to be with the both of you.
Pleasure to have you here.
Oh, my goodness. And don't you flatter me by saying I'm one of your favorite people.
But you are.
And you guys are mine as well.
Oh, well,
we're never insincere.
And I'm going to miss you when I'm out west. I'm going to miss you.
Not even talk about it. It'll be an emotional program if we really talk about this.
I brought an extra handkerchief.
Okay. All right. Well, I tell you, when I had to get my mittens and hat to walk my dog this morning, I thought, man, maybe I'll just jump in Dennis's car and go out west with him.
Whoa.
But anyway.
Let me call my wife about that one, okay? All right.
All right. Well, anyway, it's lovely to be here this morning. Fall is definitely here. And I have brought a special guest with me, another one of my favorite people.
Yep.
I have many. IODG Olawalana is with me, and Io is our recycling coordinator at Iowa State University, and I would say a unique piece about that, among so many that Io has jumped into, is that in the history of Iowa State, he is our first full-time recycling coordinator that we have given that role to. It's exciting for us to have that new focus on recycling. And Io has been on the program before. He's not new to the program. Mm-hmm. He's only been in his position, what did you tell me the other day, 15 months? Oh, my goodness. With what he's accomplished, he could easily be saying he's been here 10 years. But he came on initially when he first started. We were so excited to have the role back at Iowa State and at a full-time level. And then he also joined, I believe, Ursula in talking about a really unique graduate program thesis project that he did when he was in Colorado related to making greenhouses out of 2-liter bottles. Mm-hmm. So Io has such a passion for this area, and I brought him on today because he is undertaking such a unique project related to recycling, but in a little different manner. And one thing that I would say that I think is so refreshing about Io's perspective on recycling is that he looks at recycling as a part of the puzzle of managing our waste, not the only solution. And so with that in mind, and I would say, too, that at Iowa State, we're really focused on trying to be very overarching and very inclusive in how we look at different opportunities for the products that we're demanding and how they can be managed at the end of their life, and how we can sort of honor that embodied energy and the embodied resources that, you know, go into those products. And so the Environmental Protection Agency has a waste management hierarchy of most preferred and least preferred according to really honoring and getting the most out of that embodied energy as far as how we handle waste. And so Io, could you talk a little bit about the waste management hierarchy and how that looks, just to give our readers a little visual, because I think it sets up nicely your project.
Yes, thanks.
So, first of all, welcome.
Welcome.
I went off a long ways in introducing you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to be back, and thanks for having me. Basically, the EU, the Environmental Protection Agency has had a waste hierarchy, which explains how best we can manage our waste, which starts with it's more or less like a triangle, upside down, with the top portion of the hierarchy saying reduce, then followed by reuse, then recycle, then energy management or energy recovery, then landfill. So these are the layers that EPA has actually laid out as best practices on how effectively we could manage our waste. And just speaking to what Mary has said, here at Iowa State, we've been, working on our best to, project best practices to our stakeholders, faculty, staff, students. And I always give this analogy. Think about someone that, was born in Ames, grew up in Ames, came to Iowa State, and, at the end of his schooling career here in Ames, moved to places like Colorado or California. And such person doesn't have, enough exposure on how to manage waste. Such person is going to struggle. So that's why we at Iowa State, particularly my role, is to be able to, explain the best practices using the waste hierarchy, the reduce, reuse, and recycle model, as our focus, you know, to encourage people to think about some of those things. And that's some of the things we're going to be talking today.
Now, I understand you have a project that you have undertaken there, if I read this correctly, cardboard shredding for bedding. Is that right? Can you explain that?
That is our new project we want to highlight. It is so exciting.
Yeah, it's, you know, talking about, you know, that, I think since this the China sword, when China stopped taking our materials coming from the United States.
For recycling.
Yeah, right. The recycling market has been turned upside down, you know, in most advanced countries. U.S., Europe, and all of that. And, you know, there's been a lot of municipalities and cities around the country that have been, you know, asking, like, what can we do now? You know, what do we do now and all of that? So, and for us at Iowa State, you know, recycling has been, you know, been one of our top priorities, you know, but we also have to think about, you know, how, you know, how do we make this more financially responsible. And we've been spending quite a bit on, you know, recycling cardboard. And so over the last 2-3 months, I've been researching and thinking about what else can we do with recycling apart from, you know, recycling this. Because, I mean, 2-3 years ago, if you have cardboard, you know, and you recycle them, you get money back. But the current recycling market right now as a nosedive to the extent that you have to even pay to be able to dispose them of. So basically, over the last 2-3 months, I've been thinking about what else we can do. And we came up with this idea working with another colleague of mine in procurement on campus to see how we can reuse cardboard, shredded cardboard for animal bedding. So we reached out to the ISU teaching firm on campus, and it's like, would you guys be interested in, you know, testing, you know, shredded cardboard for the animals? I said, yes. And we asked, well, what are you currently using right now? And they said, right now they use for the animal beddings, corn stalks. But the problem they're having with that is, you know, it doesn't really hold all the poops and, you know, the pees of the animals, you know, well enough. And, you know, that requires them constantly changing them and requiring more materials to be used. So we reached out to them. We, you know, set up, you know, the logistics for us to make that happen. And we tested about a month ago, we tested shredded cardboard for the animals, and we actually worked great. You know, the animals loved it so much. And with the temperature, you know, beginning to drop, I think cardboard provides a unique opportunity. Temperature condition for the animals. And it's a unique one for us at Iowa State. And as far as I know, Iowa State will be the first university in the country that's actually trying this, using their own cardboard on campus to, you know, for the animals.
That's wonderful. You know, I grew up on the farm, and I bedded my share of animals.
Yes.
what a great idea to shred cardboard. Yeah. You know, we were involved in our Kiwanis Club in Story City with recycling. We set up a recycling truck, and people would bring paper and cardboard from the community, and we'd pack it heavy, so we got money for it. But it was brought up to Mason City for a company that recycled it into insulation. And I felt wonderful about that, that all this cardboard that's discarded in newspaper isn't burned, but used for maybe another 100 years as housing insulation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And we learned that the market's complex. China had a great deal with marketability of cardboard, and I think they've stopped taking that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
And see, we're at a time when, with Amazon and all the stuff being shipped, there's probably more cardboard out there than there ever has been.
Absolutely.
Because of all the stuff being shipped. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And right now, on average, on campus, we generate close to 96 to 100 tons a month on campus. And you know, with all these huge materials, you know, and also the complexity of the market, you know, generating 100 tons of cardboard and, you know, having to pay heavily to be able to recycle that, we need to start doing things differently. And that's why we came up with this idea of reusing shredded cardboard, you know, for animal beddings.
Well, now, Mary, this opens up a question here. If this works on campus.
Yes.
And you are, as we know, wearing numerous hats, okay?
Uh-huh.
Could this spread to the city of Ames? Might it? Could it? Is that possible?
Well, you know, it was interesting. We were just having a discussion a couple of days ago about that there is an incredible transferability opportunity for what we're looking at. Obviously, Iowa State does a number of different operations with animals, so we've got plenty of animals that require bedding, and we also have different potential partnerships in the community with local farmers. And so I think this really does have the opportunity to look at that transferability and the opportunity to serve certainly more than the college campus. One thing that makes it really unique for us at Iowa State is with our own composting facility, we've got a really nice closed loop with the bedding at the end of its life after it's been used for the animals. Then we take it to our compost facility. It's got some different sort of bugs in it that increase and enhance our composting process.
Absolutely.
And so that's been very beneficial in that way as well. But you bring up a very good point. I think there are many opportunities. And there's a Kiwanis trailer also here in our community. And just recently, they have stopped taking corrugated cardboard the challenges of markets. And you mentioned Amazon. And one of the things we're seeing from different shipping companies is in order to get the most cost effectiveness in transporting items, they like to put them in similar size boxes, right? So we're seeing huge boxes going out for very small shipments. Certainly, it looks at the efficiency in transporting everything, but it also makes it much more difficult.
In fact, my major job in retirement is when my wife gets deliveries of Amazon in those cardboard boxes, and she does all the time, I have to somehow tear them apart. So I'm out by the trash bin ripping them apart and trying to make them flat to go into the bin.
Right?
That's what I do for a living. I just wanted people to know that.
Well, you know, weight resistance training is important.
Like a surgeon with a box cutter.
Oh, I never used a box cutter.
I could reduce a box to flatness in about 20 seconds.
I just want to tell you, I'm very strong until they have the tape on the boxes, and then I'm trying to get through that tape. But anyway, that's my
problem.
You've
got to get box cutters. Dennis, get box cutters. Well, you know, the main thing is, and I'm sure both you and I realize that, Mary, that is awareness.
Absolutely.
When we set up the recycling trailer in Story City, people hadn't thought of that before.
Right.
And I found out, there were three of us who did this project. We found out that was 24/7. I remember on Christmas, I'd say, I don't have to go to the trailer today because it's a holiday. Wrong. All the Christmas wrappings and boxes.
Oh, my goodness.
We were overwhelmed. You'd get to the trailer, and it would be impassable to get back to where we were packing it. So that didn't even exist in the community before. Now the community has to have it, and people feel good about not burning that or throwing it away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I assume that at the college campus, with all these young students, there's more awareness, isn't there, among that population that you recycle? Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the key focus on this school here, to be able to let students know some of the programs we have to, you know, encourage them to, you know, be involved deeply in our recycling program. And, you know, last year when I started this job, I had the focus of making Iowa State a zero-waste campus by with an 85% diversion from the landfill by year 2025. And if we're able to move forward with this project, I think that will, you know, increase, you know, or probably say accelerate, the opportunity or the potentials for us reaching that goal. So basically, I'm super excited about this project, and we are also, in terms of creating awareness on campus, we are collaborating with different stakeholders, faculty, staff, students, you know, various department, athletics, department of residents, to increase, the level of awareness about some of the projects that we are working on. And I really, really look forward to, you know, some of those things we are doing.
You are really fortunate to be working alongside Mary Rankin. I'm going to praise Mary considerably.
I would say fortunate to be working alongside truthfully.
Mary, because you have put together a series of programs in this community, on this campus, that really put us in the forefront of a lot of efforts around the country, Mary. You're to be praised for this. You've talked about it on the air here this past summer, the food waste diversion program that is relatively new.
Yes.
How is that going, by the way? A quick update on that.
It is going very well. We have basically sold out of our first 100 buckets.
Oh, that's great.
And we are ordering more. And we have had some businesses that have said, you know, I think this would be great for our break rooms and raising that awareness. I know that REG is putting them in their break rooms. We've had conversations with them. McFarland Clinic is looking at putting them in their break rooms across town. And then there are businesses looking at composting their food waste as a part of the services that they provide. So that's been exciting, as well as just the, you know, number of people and students that are particularly interested.
Paul,
in
remember when Mary brought that bucket right onto our set here, and it had been chewed by the dog,
Yes, Drew really, really is fond of our bucket. Yes.
And that was one of our highlights this past summer. But Mary, there's so many other programs going on. We're talking Rummage Rampage, and I'm still recovering from that in terms of the lifting.
I'm still
that I
looking
had to
for
do.
A mug to provide to you, Dennis.
Oh, that was quite a story that Mary and I shared on Local Talk a while back. But you are to be praised for that. Are you having fun doing this job? These jobs?
I am. It's so much fun, and you're so very kind with your words. But I have to say, this is a team effort. It takes a village. It takes a team. It takes champions. It takes passion. It takes dedication. And you know, this is my job. But all of those that are assisting in making these programs successful, it's not their jobs. You know, these are things that they are voluntarily saying this is important. I'm going to make time in my day. I'm going to get publicity out. I'm going to volunteer some hours. I'm going to spend some time supporting these things. So I'm just so honored, first of all, to be in a position where I'm able to do different projects like this. But in being in such a supportive campus and Ames community where folks have been so interested in being engaged. So I am having fun. It is fun. This is something I'm very passionate about. My parents instilled looking at how we leave the planet for the next generation. Yeah. They never thought of themselves as farmers that owned land. They looked at themselves as caretakers for the next generation that would be relying on that land. So I give them a lot of credit, but then also it's just been such an honor.
I think that, Mary, you and I were evangelists. You're getting the word out.
I'm trying.
And you know, when you're my age, you realize what an attitudinal change has happened over time. Back in the 50s, before the bottle bill, ditches were full of debris and discarded things. Sometimes out in the network of gravel roads, someone had dropped a stove or a refrigerator in the ditch. Well, the change of attitude about that is when the astronauts went to the moon. And for the first time, they photographed the Earth. And we saw that little ribbon of atmosphere. And we found out in our own minds so visually that we live in an envelope and then everything's recycled. We're drinking the same water Jesus did. We have to manage our resources. There are still people who are reticent to accept that, but awareness will be created and guilt will be there if you don't comply.
Well, now, have we praised you enough yet? We still have some more
goodness.
Time left.
I'm going to walk out of here on air.
Mary and Io, don't go away. I want to thank you both for being here. Paul, you and I have just about 90 seconds to say goodbye to each other. This is my last broadcast here for a little while I head west and my wife and I seek a bit warmer climate. I just want to tell you, Paul, on the air, and Paul Hertz behind the scenes here, both of you, it has been a great joy working with you on this broadcast. I'm going to miss you both. I'm going to miss this show.
Dennis is a great producer. I come down here and talk on the air. Dennis has everything ready. I think it's his background as a newsman. It's a tremendous contribution.
Well, I've had a pleasure being on this broadcast. We love Ames. I walk to the station on Friday mornings. It has been a great joy to be on this broadcast. I will continue listening. I will continue doing news from California on Mondays and Fridays. Thank everybody. And none of this gets on the air without Paul Hertz, whom I want to thank publicly again. Thank you, Paul, for being behind the scenes and putting us on the air. You are great to work with. I hope you'll be back next year. You have been listening to Local Talk Friday. I'm Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Local Talk also airs today at noon and 5 p.m. right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org, and as well as finding links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
As always, our theme song is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. I got to work with Kate Shelley's nephew Jack at Iowa State in the journalism program. They're both great people. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come on down and join the Local Talk team.
And remember, You, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and
we'll see you again on the radio. Have a great winter.